Sustaining Alive with Rita Steele, thanks to Kraft Homes, Homestar approved practitioners.
All right, as just mentioned, this segment is brought to you by Kraft Homes, specialists in craft homes, eco and sustainable homes. We've got Mark and we've got Paul from Watercare in the studio. A couple of weeks we had some people from the Titirangi Protection
Group
right, in the studio who were talking, who said their piece on the proposed Watercare plans for the area. And we've got Watercare in this week to have a chat about...
This is great. People are freaking out.
People are freaking out over this thing, so it's great to have Watercare in here to give us the sort of straight ahead what's going on, in it, so to speak.
Yeah.
And I wasn't here that week, and it's really important for me that we get any facts that I said on this show correct, so that was something that there was a few things I think that we wanted to clarify and get those right. If we can't get some facts right, then it kind of puts in jeopardy everything else we're saying, so we'll talk about those as well. Should I kick it off?
Yeah, go for it, Rita.
Yeah, so firstly, can you tell us why we need a new water treatment plant in out west?
Yeah, so the Huia Water Treatment Plant was first opened back in 1928. So it's been
great
around,
year that one, I think.
Yeah, I wish I was there. So yeah, it's almost 100 years old, and by the time that the project's completed, it will almost be 100 years old, and that's really the reason why we're replacing it. The plant supplies about 20% of Auckland's water. That's water that is provided into about 300,000 people's homes every day, 24 hours of the day, 7 days of the week. So it's incredibly important. And at different times, it becomes even more important than that. This time, a couple of years ago, the old so-called Tasman Tempest came through. And it was the only plant that was actually operational for about half a day. So it was supplying all of Auckland's water. So it was a really an emergency situation for us.
Out of interest, how is water treating technology changed, and has it changed significantly?
Yeah, it has changed significantly over that 100 years. When the plant was first opened, literally, I guess starting, the first part of water treatment is actually the dams themselves. Mm. And the dams in the Waitakere Ranges are in protected native bush, so it's the best raw water quality you can get. And 100 years ago, the only treatment process was that raw water and stored in the dams and then into sand filters, and that was it, straight into the people's taps. Whereas today, there's a lot more process units, and each process unit has a barrier, and we undertake an inordinate amount of monitoring to make sure that that water's safe for everyone, for whatever they're using it for, whether they're consuming it, washing in it, or for commercial uses as well.
Cool. So the site, the new water treatment plant, that's going to treat 140 million litres a day, is that the...
Yes. So currently the existing Huia water treatment plant can treat up to 126 million litres of water per day. And what we're proposing to do is the new treatment plant, it'll be designed to treat water for the next 100 years. So we're having to try and have a look at what water quality changes are going to take place over that next 100-year period, and then ensure that the plant is able to be adaptable for those changing raw water needs. And we're also taking the opportunity to make the plant slightly larger than it currently is. Now, what that means is, over the long period of time, over a year, it physically won't be able to treat any more water than the existing plant does, because the amount of water it can treat is limited by the dams that come into it. There's four dams in behind the treatment plant, and so we're not building any more dams, not making those dams any bigger. So that dictates the finite amount of water that can be treated over the course of the year. But because time's light right now, the Waitakere Ranges are actually spilling. Mm. The dams in the Waitakere Ranges are spilling, but our dams down in the Hanua Ranges, on average, are only about 60% full. So if we could treat a little bit more of that water, we would prevent the dams from spilling. That would then mean we could, reduce the treatment requirements at our southern water treatment sites and effectively save that water in those southern dams.
I should actually just say right now, if anyone does have any questions for Watercare, you can text them into 5395 and we've got the text machine open. So
I'm going to ask the most obvious question. Why can it not be put on the current location?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. It's a question we get asked most days.
I'm sure.
And we have asked ourselves, and it was a challenge that we put to ourselves. The short answer is it treats 20% of Auckland's water supply, and if we had 20% headroom at our other treatment plants, in other words, surplus capacity available at those other treatment plants, we could effectively turn the Huia treatment plant off, crank up the volume at those other plants, build a new one on the existing site. The reality is we don't have that headroom. And to build that headroom would require building a brand new water treatment plant somewhere else at a significant cost, and then turning the Huia treatment plant off, demolishing it, rebuilding it on that site.
So obviously no way to retrofit while it's running.
Yeah, and that's the thing. The site's pretty small. Yeah. It only really is large enough for that existing location. So there's just physically not enough room to build another process unit right beside an existing operational facility.
And also on that site, there's an awful lot of kauri as well.
Yes.
So we would have to basically fell those to be able to even demolish what's already there, because we've got kauri that are growing within a couple of metres of the plant.
How much of the native bush is going to be affected by the new plant that's going to be built?
Yeah, so that's one of the challenges that our Watercare board put on us. So when they approved this location as the preferred site, that approval was put on a real challenge to the project team, and that was to minimise the ecological effects associated with it. So in total, there's about 2.5 hectares of land that's required to build the existing to rebuild the water treatment plant, and about just over half a hectare required for the new reservoir, which will be located on the other side of the road. And then a little later on we'll come back, demolish the part of the existing site and put the second reservoir that's required on that existing site. Now, not all of that land is in pristine bush. Some of that land is, I guess you could describe it as a little bit scrubby. The site used to have houses on it. In fact, when the plant was first built back in the 1920s, there was no residential areas around it. And our plant staff that operated the plant 24 hours a day had to live somewhere, and we actually built four houses. And
six.
It was actually on those house sites that we're proposing to build both the reservoir and the water treatment plant.
So a lot of the area was actually cleared at that time.
Okay.
But there is some established Cody, because that seems to be the biggest sort of gripe that we're hearing. So, and I think that was also something you guys wanted to clarify from the interview with the TPG. Do you want to talk to that?
Yeah, so I'll kick it off, and Paul will jump into some of the detail and talk to some of the specifics. But yeah, certainly when we kicked the project off, we had ideas of grandeur of making this wonderful water treatment plant that's going to last us for the next 100 years. But it soon became very obvious when we were working with the community consultation group that we set up to help us with this project, how passionate everyone was about the native bush and the area, in particular kauri. And so we put some real challenges on the project engineering team to reduce the footprint and to change the layout of the site so that we could minimise any effects on it. And I'm really proud to say now that after all the extensive surveys that we've undertaken, we're not aware of any kauri that are being affected by the proposal as it now stands. But Paul will talk a bit more specifically about some of the trees that will be affected by the project.
Yeah, well, basically, we had two reservoirs across the road from the existing plant, and one of them would have been built on the knoll, which has got really large kauri on it, but we've managed to be able to relocate that reservoir onto the existing site and have it at the appropriate elevation for the water to be able to flow from there all the way to the shore. But
those bloody shore people again, I tell you.
But we will actually end up removing quite large kaikatea. There's on
oh,
both.
They
on,
are my favourite.
Yes, but they're quite amazing trees. Yeah. But I'm afraid we've managed to basically realign everything after 2 years of pushing and shoving between engineers, ecologists, and everybody.
I can imagine.
It's been quite stressful.
Quite a dance.
Yes. Yeah. So we got to the point where we were not removing any kauri that we were aware of. there may be saplings and that sort of thing, which is amongst the footprints, but no large trees.
And I think the other one that was a concern for people was the working around Kauri. There is quite an ecosystem that they seem to enjoy, yep. Which is one that is primarily an untouched ecosystem. So the moment that we or any species, for that matter, seems to go anywhere near them, they get sick. So they are very vulnerable. And that's obviously a concern, especially as we don't know a lot about what it is that keeps them healthy.
Yep.
So I imagine that's a huge challenge for you guys and something that people are really passionate about. And we only know what we know so far. And I think that, unfortunately, with these things, we learn the hard way post things. So do you want to talk about some of the mitigation you're doing?
Yeah, so certainly, I mean, this whole... it's a really evolving science around the management of Kauri dieback, or perhaps more correctly termed today, Kauri protection. So we'll be making sure that, first of all, if this project gets approved and it's going through a resource consenting process now where we're an applicant and have applied for it, it'll be heard before independent commissioners and they'll consider the views of everyone that's submitted on the project and ultimately they'll make a decision. Now, if the decision is one where the project can go ahead, what we are proposing is some very rigorous conditions around the management and protection of Kauri. And so that will be including whatever's the most recent science available at that time.
If people do want to make submissions on this, they can head along to watercare.co.nz.
I think submissions have closed.
So formal submissions have closed now, but certainly if you nip along to our website, www.watercare.co.nz, look up Huia Project. There's an inordinate amount of information, literally thousands of pages of ecological studies, and we're more than happy to talk to people about what we're doing.
We've had a couple of texts come in, which is, in typical fashion, not always on the topic specifically.
Are you guys tickets or the ticket giveaway?
What do you guys know about the fluoride? Someone's asking, how do they ensure that the fluoride dose is correct, and are you transparent with the auditing and monitoring results, i.e. are they made public in real time? Question mark.
Yeah, sounds like one for me. We fluoridate Auckland's water supply at the request of the Ministry of Health. It's not a decision that we make. It's a decision made by the health professionals. In terms of confidence, we have literally thousands of samples of water analysed, and it's analysed for a whole range of analytes, one of those being fluoride, and it's all water is supplied and meets drinking water standards in New Zealand, so we are high confidence that there's no issues associated with that at all.
Okay. I'd be more worried about the nitrates if I were you.
I think all the water's pretty fucking good.
Another one, why would it not be reasonable that all houses have their own grey water tanks to supply their household, especially in the Waitakes with the new developments? This future-proofing NZ going forward, not using drinking water for flushing your toilets showering in.
And can I add to that?
Too common sense. Well,
can I add to that? Because this is my bugbear, being that I like to think that I'm a champion for sustainability. What we were taught at university was that looking at things like water recycling plants. There's some really, really good case studies overseas of them being really successful. And in Auckland, we're seeing, I think there's another 800,000 people that are supposed to come in here by 2050. What are we doing to create like integrated water management systems over just, because eventually we're going to run out of water.
Yeah.
So,
no,
but there's lots falling from the sky.
So on point there. I mean, the old way of doing things isn't the way to do things going forward, and we have to be a lot more innovative in what we do. There's some really good things happening around grey water recycling. There's some really good things happening around capturing rainwater and roof water off your tank and off your roof and utilising that as well. And I think it's really, it becomes a customer choice. I mean, there's nothing stopping anyone if they wish to put a rain butt outside and capture that water and use it. I guess the thing that we we only like to counsel people about is just go into it with your eyes wide open. You know, putting a tank on, a little pump to circulate water around your house is going to cost you several thousands of dollars. And whilst it's raining, which it is at the moment, your tank's going to be full. But during a drought, chances are that tank may not be sufficient to tide you over. And at that point, you'll switch over to the public system and expect to have that continuity of supply. So it provides some resilience, particularly in civil defence emergencies, and I think it has a really good place in that as well.
We're looking at places like the Northwestern where we're growing quite significantly, but there's actually quite big areas where we could actually be looking at water recycling plants. And I look at the, I think you say at the Rose Hill one in Western Sydney, and that's a really good example of, and developers actually having to kind of chip in on some of this infrastructure, which at the moment is kind of landing at the doorstep of the ratepayers. So it kind of, those sorts of things can create a bit of resilience, help mitigate some of the costs. And also, future-proof us from having to create any new dams or steal any more of the Waikato water, which I'm sure they're eventually going to get sick of.
So what we've set ourselves some pretty ambitious targets around water efficiency, and we're seeking a 15% reduction in per capita consumption by 2025. Okay. And
is that maybe mainly through household devices? And
there's a whole lot of different streams of activities. We've had a teacher working with school-aged children. We've been doing that for over about 13 years now. And so there's sort of intergenerational education that we're driving through. So it's much of a long-term plan. But then there's much more short-term options around much more water-efficient devices and encouraging people and just providing information out there. There's a Blue Tick program that we've been involved in. Certainly water efficiency is really the key thing. Now, Aucklanders, I think you should give yourselves a pat on the back. You are the most water efficient users in the country. We use significantly less water per person than anyone else in New Zealand. So,
That was directly correlated to when we started getting charged for it? Because obviously there's an incentive, right, for us not to use too much water.
Smell?
I think it is choice. I think we do pay for water by meter, and also we pay inadvertently our wastewater by the amount of water we consume as well. So with the power of choice, we can make informed decisions. So if I was a really keen gardener, I might choose to be incredibly water efficient inside my home so that I can put some water on my garden over the summer months and my water bill's not too expensive. Whereas if I wasn't such a keen gardener, but I wanted to wash my car or my boat or some other recreational thing, I've got some choices.
Just going back to the water treatment plants in Auckland, so there are 7 sites.
Yes.
Were the other sites looked at to take up some of the capacity from the Huia one, or did you look at perhaps increasing the capacity of them?
Yeah, so in terms of sort of dialing this project back to when it started quite some years ago, there was in excess of over 100 different locations that were looked at for the replacement Huia plant. Now, there's some constraints that we have, and one of those first constraints is it's got to be reasonably close to where the existing dams are. Mm. The cost of putting interconnecting pipelines to somewhere tens of kilometres away would obviously be hugely cost prohibitive. The other thing that's really important is, we talked about sustainability for a few moments, and sustainability is really at the heart of our future planning, and it's really bound up in our name as well. And so one of those elements of sustainability is utilising gravity wherever we can, and we're really fortunate that vast majority of Auckland's water supply is supplied under gravity. So the upper dams in the Waitakere Ranges under gravity flows down to the water treatment plant. Now, in the Waitakere's, we also have a couple of lower dams, and we have to pump that water up. But so the location is really quite important to be able to utilise that energy of gravity. It gets up every morning and works for free.
Got one more text in. I'm not sure if what this refers to, but may as well mention it. Lol, fluoride. .. Do you still do firemen training in the old building? Does this mean anything to anyone? Is it like
Oh, yeah, yeah, no, 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 yeah, 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 yeah. Well, there's probably a couple of parts to that. Yeah, yeah. There is. We've got an old, really old building, and yeah, there's been a few search and rescue things. It's pretty decrepit. And actually, as part of this project, the Huia Water Treatment Plant Replacement Project, what we're proposing to do as part of our, you know, it's sort of a bit of an enhancement activity, is to restore that building to its former glory. It's a heritage protected site. Yeah, we haven't been as good as we could have been looking after that site, so we are proposing to do it up. So at that point, they won't be able to use it for that.
Okay. Rita, do you have anything else?
No, the only other thing that when I was going through, oh my God, there's so many documents. So I'm going to be honest, I did not read all of them, and I'm a pretty studious person. So so big, you've got to give it to the Titirangi residents for sifting through all that paperwork. What I couldn't find, though, was, and I rattle on about this a lot, is an ecological economic cost of the site and the loss that we'll have to the site in terms of its erosion controls, carbon sequestering, wind mitigation, and I'm a big believer that bar a revolution, the way that we can fix our problems is possibly by doing a fair comparison on what the economic cost is.
Know what we're losing.
So is that something that you guys have looked at? Because then it's very hard to say this site is better than another, because you know the cost of the ecological services that this area gives us is quite important. So yeah, and I couldn't find anything on that.
I'll kick off the reply. Again, Paul kicked me under the table and get into the detail of it. I guess we haven't monetized it, so to answer your question, no, we haven't done it in a monetary value. But what we have attempted to do was, in the early stages of the project, when we were comparing different locations against each other, we were comparing them on a range of multi-criteria basis, some of them being economic, some of them being environmental, some of them being accessibility and traffic management and a whole range of activities. But I guess flipping it around the other way, there are going to be some effects. It's really unfortunate, and it pains us that we're going to have to remove some significant trees in a reasonably large area. But what we've concentrated on is making sure that the mitigation exceeds the value of what of the damage that we're causing. So we're proposing a multi-pronged mitigation plan that will in time see a larger amount of carbon in effect being replaced by what we're proposing. And so what we're proposing to do is establish a trust which will remove pests, and those pests could be in the form of vegetation pests or rats, possums that are eating trees that exist today. So over time there'll be a net benefit.
Yes, I did see the mitigation plan, and I did think that it's across different landowners, and my personal view on that is that these landowners should actually be doing that already, because it is Waitakere Heritage Area. I live in the area. It costs quite a bit to be looking after that land, and it is an honour, but it is a responsibility for people that live in the area. And one of the things that living in the Waitakere Heritage Area also means is that you do lose some land rights, and that's probably something I think that it's fair to say residents will probably be a bit upset about as well, because they've lost land rights, but they feel that they're having to, you know, then still put up with an industrial site kind of moving next to them. So, that's something that whilst I can see there's some great mitigation, but it is unfortunately, as far as I'm concerned, the council's responsibility. They should be doing that already. And unfortunately, over the years, we've just seen declining budgets for that stuff. So, it is a tricky one, and I think it's really good that you guys came up to explain the situation. We all want fresh water. It is a good reminder that everyone should do their bit to not reuse too much water. Build sustainable housing.
How many cups a day am I supposed to have now? Is it like, have we dropped a couple of cups in Auckland?
You've got to have two additional ones for the fluoride, mate.
Paul and Mark from Watercare, thanks so much, gents.
Kia ora, thank you very much.
That was Sustaining Alive on 95 BFM. Thanks to Kraft Homes, Homestar approved practitioners. Go to krafthomes.co.nz.